So who with the resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 93. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about our interview with Gordy Haab, the composer for Star Wars Battlefront series, both Battlefront 1 and 2, and Star Wars The Old Republic MMO series, as well as a slew of other games. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi, everyone.
Danya, it was kind of weird. I said, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin. Like, not Danya, it was just Caitlin last week, so we missed you.
I know. Unfortunately, family emergencies and stuff have kept me from being able to record, but hopefully I'm back properly now.
It's alright. You just missed my amazing recap of the new Star Tours ride.
And
Secrets of the Empire, which I know you're doing soon, so you'll get to experience that in all its amazing glory.
I am. Hold on. I've got the date in here. It is the 10th of February that I'm doing that.
It's coming up soon.
It's coming up very, very soon.
You need to tell me as soon as you do it so we can actually talk about it in depth. It's pretty awesome.
I'm really excited for it. I'm actually going to probably be doing like a full review of it for Hyperbolt as well.
Nice.
So I'm excited about it.
We could talk about it together. Now I will tell you this, Danya. One thing: whoever's with you in this, they need to say, "Aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper?" Because I will tell you this, Danya. I love you, but you're about the same height as Leslie, and I had to say that to her because she was itty bitty for a stormtrooper. That's all I'm going to say there. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. And definitely want to go ahead, and if you're not listening to them on Audible, definitely look at getting some of the new Star Wars books leading up to The Last Jedi, because as soon as all this news and everything kind of passes, guess what we're going to be going into? Is our book reviews. So we're going to get caught up on those soon. We've also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include our Discord chat, where you can message us day or night. Sometimes, because of our different time zones, we are available almost 24 hours because it's different time zones. Or you could just message and we might respond. You can also join us in the recording studio and chat with us there. You can join us for movie nights and After Dark episodes, which we have pretty cool. We also have t-shirts and merch available on our website. If you can't join us, if you can't support us through Patreon, check those out at resistanceradio.net. I think it's time for the news. So first bit, we talked about this last week. We just gave away a copy of Stormtroopers Beyond the Armor. And going for another week, just one more week, you have time to enter this, is we're about to give away Rebel Files Deluxe Edition, which is really, really cool. It's a really cool book. I love looking through it, all the little notes and everything that are in the side columns and everything. You can enter that contest by just going into, go to hypeable.com or resistanceradio.net, where we link back to where it's at on Hypeable. So definitely go ahead and enter. It's free. Donnie, do you have anything to say about the Rebel Files? Because you did an awesome write-up on hypeable.com about it.
It is so cool. So they've done a couple of different, like, files before, like, that have the little book in it. So you can get the book just on its own, the Rebel Files book, which is actually just the book itself is really, really cool, because it has a lot of information in there, and in, like, the sides of it, you've got, like, Leia and Poe and Admiral Akbar and Vice Admiral Holdo and Mon Mothma, and loads of other characters, like, writing notes back and forth to each other. Like, there's little bits of, like, banter and all sorts on there, which is actually really, really cool. So the book itself is just super interesting, but what makes this different is it comes in its own, like, Rebel case. So it looks like, something out of the films. And the great thing about these books, particularly, is that on the outer part of it, there's no real prominent Star Wars branding. So it looks as though it's just a book from within the universe. So the way that they've just designed it is really, really, really cool. I love it so much. And just like all the different bits that come inside there, like you've got like loads of like extra little bits.
You know, I think my favorite is the very first little side bit. Like just the beginning when it talks about like chapter one, Alliance, Chiron. And then at the bottom is like a little note from Leia. Or Leia, talking about the date and time. So basically, the date and time used here, like used in this, because we no longer use from Battle of Yavin, which is like what the old EU used to use. This uses the date after the formation of the Empire and before the formation of the Empire. And Leia's comments in the book, I love it. Just like the started off is, in addition to wiping away the Republic, the Emperor reset the dating system to the time before the formation of the Empire and the time after its formation. Yet another display of his absolute control, dash Leia. And I love that. So it's like standard date 14-17 AFE after formation of the Empire. Like that just gives you like the full idea of like what's in there. I just loved it from the beginning. Sorry.
No. It's just really cool. Like that. There's not a lot of books. Like a lot of the books that you get are like great because they give you really good insight into just the universe in general. This book is really great because it gives you little snippets insight into the characters and how they feel about certain things that have happened within the Star Wars universe that you may not get to hear their opinions about. And it just brings a load of other characters together and you get a kind of feel for what their relationships are like as well. It's just so cool.
It's really cool.
It's
definitely something worth looking into if you don't win the contest. But it'd be really awesome if you win. So go to hypeable.com or resistanceradio.net. Click on the links and enter in it. It's a random drawing, so good luck to all of you. Sorry, I can't skew it in anyone's favor. I know people have asked. I can't. I'm like, I can't do that. I'm sorry. I just can't.
We can't give one to, like, all of you.
I would if I could give away hundreds of copies of the book, I would gladly do that. But unfortunately, I can't afford that, or you know, convince someone to give us those many copies. Anyway, moving on to other news, the Oscar nominations were just announced, and guess what? The Last Jedi has picked up 4 nominations: for original score for Mr. John Williams, visual effects, sound editing, and sound mixing. And I will say, I think they have a pretty good shot at some of those, just because it was such a good film. Even if you didn't like the story or whatever your opinions are, the visual effects, I think, were absolutely phenomenal. None other than John Williams and that score. I've listened to that soundtrack way too many times. My daughter already hums along to it. Okay, maybe she doesn't, but she should. And, sound editing and mixing, I thought sounded really good, so I was not ever worried about it. Like, so, of course, they're nominated again. What do you think about getting some Oscar noms for The Last Jedi?
I'm glad. I'm really glad that it picked up some nominations. I'm a little disappointed it didn't pick one up for, like, the cinematography one. Just because I think this film was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I think for some of the cinematography ones, a lot of the big films, because there's a lot of visual effects in sci-fi set in space, I think it loses out because of that, even though the cinematography is absolutely beautiful. I think when you look at films that have gotten cinematography, it's ones that have like wide outdoor shots or unique shots shot in water or something like that. So, you know, when Return of the King, Lord of the Rings got it, it's because you had all those big, beautiful shots, helicopter shots of New Zealand and stuff like that. Those tend to be what's recognized for cinematography, not the really cool ones that are shot inside the studio and stuff like that. Even though I think the composition of the shots and cinematography of the film, in addition to the visual effects, just made this film look beautiful. I think that's kind of where it gets knocked down, and I think the Academy, because they just don't vote on stuff like that. But regardless, yeah. It's still got 4 nominations, which is awesome. Only one it less did. From The Force Awakens, but more than the prequels, which is great.
Yeah, I think that it's got... The one that I think it's got the hardest battle for, in all honesty, and I'm sort of glad that Ben isn't here right now, because he might, like, he would probably be like, scandalous. I think the hardest category for it to win is original score.
Yeah.
There are some incredible nominations in there this year. And I'm not entirely sure who's going to get that this year. Because
you have people like Hans Zimmer, Alexander Desplat, you know, people who've, you know, the problem here, I'll tell you this, original score, I'm looking at it, and every single one of those people who've been nominated for original score have all won an Oscar before. Like, they're all absolutely amazing composers.
Yeah.
So you don't know. And I will say John Williams is absolutely wonderful. So I cannot say enough good things about him and his music. So we'll see, yeah. You know, we'll have to see.
I honestly, and I might be completely off and not, I might be proved wrong, but I think that Alexandra Desplat is going to get it for The Shape of Water. Yeah, I think he might get it.
Yeah, and for visual effects, I think that's where it's going to be the biggest runner-up, because Blade Runner was a sleeper hit. But really well done. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Didn't like it.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was in there, and I think that was done really well. Kong, yeah. Skull Island, obviously The Last Jedi, and War for the Planet of the Apes. I feel like maybe War for the Planet of the Apes may win visual effects, but you never know. Last Jedi definitely stands a chance, because it was just absolutely beautiful.
Out of all of those films, visually the one that impressed me the most was Star Wars The Last Jedi, but then I'm also, like, really difficult to please with that stuff. I'll admittedly say that I didn't see War for the Planet of the Apes. I saw all the rest of them in the category, and of all of them, the only film out of that entire category. So it was, like, Blade Runner 2049, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Kong Skull Island, Star Wars The Last Jedi, War for the Planet of the Apes. Didn't see War for Planet of the Apes. Didn't really like Blade Runner, Guardians 2, or Kong Skull Island. The only film out of the ones that I've seen in that category that I liked and enjoyed was The Last Jedi.
Now, I will say this. I'm trying to think of all those films that are nominated. You have Andy Serkis, who is in both Star Wars and War for Planet of the Apes. You have Sam Jackson, who was in Kong Skull Island, who is Mace Windu. I feel like everyone in all those categories, I just need to dive a little bit deeper into all of them, but I feel like they have some connection to Star Wars, but maybe not. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting just looking at those. Anyway, let's move on to our next set of news. This next set of news, I actually smiled a little bit when I got it, because I think it's an interesting reaction to Star Wars. So Laura Dern says children are scared of her since she appeared in Star Wars The Last Jedi. So Laura Dern was in Jurassic Park, and she also played Vice Admiral Holdo in Star Wars The Last Jedi. And she talks about how she never had an experience quite like Star Wars, both on set and afterwards. Because she talks about how what it feels like to be a character to young children. Not just an actor for it, but an actual character to young children that feels otherworldly or iconic or whatever it is. But basically now, instead of wanting to talk about a movie, they kind of just back away a little scared, which I think is kind of... One, I think it's cute seeing little kids go like, oh my gosh, it's Holdo or, you know, Chewbacca or whatever, when you see them at like Disneyland or a theme park or something like that. But, you know, it is. It's one of those things where Star Wars is such a unique property. Even though Jurassic Park was phenomenal, but it is such a unique property. She admitted herself that just being around Mark Hamill, who plays Luke Skywalker, it takes your breath away a little bit. And certainly even being on set, seeing these characters and Chewbacca hugging her on her first day, she wept, which I think is just interesting to think about the legacy Star Wars leaves for kids. What do you think about this, Danya? Little kids being scared of Laura Dern. Is she scary?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find her scary at all in the film.
Okay, so maybe not scary. Would you be intimidated? Let's pretend, Danya. Let's go back in time. Let's shrink you down to little Danya, who's 6 years old, seeing Star Wars, loving Princess Leia, loving, you know, Amidala, and now you see Laura Dern as Vice Admiral Holdo in The Last Jedi, and you get a chance to see her in person. Do you run up and get excited and talk to her about the movie, or do you go like, that's Vice Admiral Holdo, and you kind of shrink away?
So, everything that I watched when I was younger had characters in it, like female characters, primarily who were very intimidating or very, like, strong and very forceful with, like, opinions. I was also, probably surprising no one, have always been quite strongly opinionated. And I
really? Like, really?
Yeah.
You've always had an opinion? Mm.
I've always been that kind of person. So I would probably say that I would have been excited.
Okay.
If only because that type of character probably shaped me into being the kind of woman who didn't keep her opinions to herself and tended to, like, not let people, like, walk all over her. So I don't know. I personally, I would be excited, and I would imagine that I would have been excited when I was younger as well. So I don't know. But as for, like, Don here right now, my opinions on, like, Vice Admiral Holdo probably aren't strictly PG rated. So we're not gonna go
and into that. Let's move back to moving on. All right.
Yeah, definitely not intimidated in the way that other people might be.
Okay. Well, since we have Gordy on our show later in our spotlight topic, I did want to mention some Battlefront 2 news. Battlefront 2 is getting a server update, which is interesting because the server updates is something that people don't realize that happens. So DICE has been working in the background to make the game better than it was. And so what they've done is they've done some server updates to go ahead and fix matchmaking. This is great for those of you like me who just don't have a lot of time to play and may or may not be the best players. Now, if you're the best player, you maybe don't like this because that way you can be on a team with all your great playing friends and then just stomp on the other team. But they've improved it so that way teams will be a little bit more evenly matched and you'll get better matches and faster matches too, which is pretty cool. So they've done an awesome update to that. It's live. I actually jumped on and was able to quickly get a match while my daughter took a small nap for like 20 minutes. So it was nice. So I'm happy with the update that was done. Even though you don't see it, it's not very apparent. Any comments on the update, Danya?
As I am not playing it, not especially. Mostly because the style of like game that it is not one that I tend to play anyway. So, yeah, not really much to say in terms of this update, but glad that it's going to be matching people a little bit better. Just because that's something that tends to frustrate me, because particularly when you try to play online and get matched up with people, I find that the skill level matching is really uneven. And so a lot of times, particularly when you're newer to the game and you're trying to get a handle on it and trying to improve, when you're basically getting killed every 2 seconds and you can barely move because you're vastly overpowered by a team that you're up against, when you're trying to get a better handle on the game, it's a huge turn off to me in these types of games. Like, it tends to stop me from buying them because I'm like, well, there's no point if I'm getting killed every 2 seconds and I can't even, like, be around long enough to improve, then what's the point? If there's no actual physical way of me being able to learn and improve because I'm killed all the time, then I'm just like, what's the point? I'm not, like, wasting the ridiculous amount of money that these games cost to spend most of my time dying and not being able to, like, enjoy and improve myself in the game. So, the that they're making the matchup system better is, like, it's good that they are addressing that there's an issue with it currently. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. All right, and last bit of news. Actually, before we get into that, I want to talk about one thing. I saw an article. I need to talk to you about this, Danya.
Okay.
Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle and Star Wars The Last Jedi. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle has finally surpassed Star Wars The Last Jedi at the top of the box office. Like, for weekends. But this is like, each of them are like weeks out of the, you know, from when they were released. And Sony just announced that they're going to be doing Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle 2, or whatever they're calling it, in December of 2019, which is going to go head-to-head with the same, you know, Episode 9. And all these articles have been coming out saying that Jumanji is the silent hitter and could it topple Star Wars. I just wanted to make a comment because I pulled up the box office mojo for both Jumanji and Star Wars The Last Jedi. Yes, Jumanji is beating it this week, but at the same time, when you look at worldwide gross total, Jumanji is about half the gross of what The Last Jedi has done.
I
think it's a successful film. I think it's a successful film on any other right, but I feel like it's hard to compare it to Star Wars. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's also really difficult as well, because if you break it down into regions, sci-fi doesn't track particularly well in places like the Middle East. Like, sci-fi never does well in the Middle East. Like, full stop. So, you should always expect very low numbers, in terms of box office return there. And also, it doesn't do particularly well in China either, which is another huge market for them. Mostly because of the kind of film that it is. You know, there are certain genres of film that just don't track very well with audiences in different box office countries around the world.
Yeah,
so
and you also have someone like, you know, what's his name, who's in Jumanji, sorry, I don't even, The Rock, who does huge overseas.
Yeah, so, he does. He's incredibly popular. So he's like a huge ticket kind of like draw to people going to see the film, particularly in other markets. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I just find it interesting that it is set to be, you know, come out same time as Episode 9, you know, since it opened it with Episode 8. Sorry, just side notes that I have. Anyway, last bit of news. We've talked about Pozu before, who has released various Star Wars style sneakers, which are shoes. Not just sneakers, but different shoes, because they have like the new Rey boots from the film and everything like that. But Pozu has gone Porg. They have a new stylish, they look like Converse, with a high top and a low top, if you will. But this amazing Porg pattern. And as much as I have a love-hate relationship for Porgs, I will say, these look really cool. They really kind of do.
That's super cute.
I kind of wish I could just like walk into work one day wearing them and people be like, are those Porgs? I'm like, yeah, they're Porgs on my feet. Like, they're really cool.
So, yeah, and I mean, in terms of pricing, they're much of a muchness with like Converse as a brand as well. Like, they're not massively away price-wise. So, like, Converse in general, which these put me in mind of. In fact, Poser's, like, shoes just in general aren't like that expensive. I've definitely spent more than this on on shoes before. So the sort of low ones.
The low tops are £59.
Yeah, low tops are £59 and the high tops are £69. Nice.
Yeah, I will say this, like, the problem with everything being pounds and overseas, then it's, like, super expensive to ship them to the U.S., and then this European sizing, you know, also confusing for U.S. people. But they're really cool. It's worth checking out. I do like in the pictures of the pork shoes as you go through them. There's a picture of just a porg by itself, and I really hope you get, like, a porg, but you probably won't. So, they're pretty darn cool, so definitely check that out if you haven't. Beyond all the other shoes, they're just really awesome, too.
Yeah, I just really love all of their Star Wars shoes a lot. I'm thinking that I might end up getting a pair eventually. There are a pair... See, the pair that I really want... They've got a pair of silver limited edition Resistance ones that are really cool, that I like. However, because they're the limited edition ones, they're £150. So
yeah,
I'm a little bit like, damn. But they also have some Ray boots as well that I really, really like. And I'm thinking
the high top boots.
Yeah, so not the ones that, like, go up to, like, mid-calf, kind of. The lower ones from, like, the first film.
From
Force Awakens. Those are the ones that I'm thinking of getting. And I can't decide between the brown or the sort of grayish color. But I love both. And those are about £150 each as well for each pair. But they are... the ones that she wears in the film. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
They make some pretty cool stuff. It's definitely worth checking out. That's just po-zu.com to check out Pozu's website. Anyway, I think it's time for our spotlight topic. All right. Well, first of all, welcome, Gordy. We're excited to have you on here. Unfortunately, my co-host, Danya, couldn't make it, mainly because she lives in London and time difference is... It's well past midnight for her, so it's all right. We have one of my other hosts. We have Ben with us. He's actually a music major, so I'm like, Ben, you need to be on to talk to Gordy for us and ask some of those really hard hitting questions that I don't know much about music.
Yeah, so now it's like on me to ask actual questions.
That's what I'm doing right here at the beginning, kind of setting the stage for any bad questions. Yeah. They come from you, Ben. Anyway. Awesome. So, real quick, Gordy, before we get started, I just want you to kind of introduce yourself to our listeners, kind of what you've done, and anything that you're excited about, Star Wars related at all. Doesn't have to be a movie, doesn't have to be what you work on. And if you have any fun Star Wars story or Star Wars related story from growing up or an experience you've had. I know you've done some really cool scores for Star Wars The Old Republic and most recently Battlefront 2, which is what we're basing this, I guess, this conversation on. But anything that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure. My name is Gordy Hab. I'm a composer. I'm originally from Richmond, Virginia, and I grew up as sort of a child of the 80s, and Star Wars played a pretty huge role in my development, I guess, musically, but also just as, as a person. I mean, it's such an iconic franchise that, it was such a big part of my life. I can remember owning all the action figures and, playing with my cousins and setting up the scenarios and that kind of thing. And then, playing the soundtrack albums in the background. And that was what sort of scored my youth in a lot of ways. So that's sort of my, Star Wars history. And, I was very fortunate to sort of find my way into the video game industry. And just at the right time, there were, when LucasArts was looking for somebody to compose music for a Indiana Jones video game. Called The Staff of Kings, and I had just finished writing a score for this short Star Wars fan film called Ryan versus Dorkman 2. And somebody at LucasArts...
I do know that fan film, yes.
Awesome. Yeah, so somebody at Lucas had seen this and liked the music in it and gave me a call. And sort of the rest is history, I suppose.
That's awesome. Well, Ben, I'm going to have you start off with some of the questions because I know you wrote some down earlier.
I did. Yeah.
He's very excited to meet you, Gordy, by the way. Awesome. So I'll let Ben go into some of them, and then I'll kind of interject there, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure.
Sounds good.
I mean, I can start with some basic, you know, getting into things, but like you already sort of told us a little bit, but I mean, I guess I just for the listeners' sake, also, how'd you get into composing and music in general, and then also specifically like video game scoring, because it's such a niche kind of profession.
Yeah, for sure. So getting into music in general, you know, was pretty early in my life. And I honestly can trace it back to almost a exact instant in time. And it was when I saw E.T. in the theater. And the score was so amazing. And, you know, I mean, I didn't know what a score was. I didn't even know that, you know, it was having this effect on me. But I remembered all of the melodies over the characters' names. You know, I was probably 6 years old or something like that. And, you know, went back with my parents to our house and picked up my dad's guitar and was kind of trying to pluck out the melodies. And they were quizzing me on the film, like, who's your favorite character? And I couldn't remember anyone's names, but I could remember all the tunes. So that was sort of, you know, the first moment that I think my parents at least realized that they should, you know, try to push me into music a bit. And that sort of started it all for me. You know, then fast forward many, many years later, I went to school at USC for a film scoring program. And I moved out to Los Angeles for that, but also to really get into film. And video games was never really even something I considered, to be honest. But I had a friend that was a classmate of mine at USC, a guy named Jesse Harlan, who went on to become one of the audio leads at LucasArts when they were making games. And I was talking to him one day and saying, you know, hey, what's it like writing music for games? I mean, tell me about it. And he was describing it. It sounded really cool. And then I started really getting interested in it. And it was right about the same time that I had just finished up this Ryan versus Dorkman Star Wars fan film. And, you know, I passed that on to them. He passed it around the office. They all loved it. And I got hired to do Indiana Jones and the Staff of Kings, and that kind of led to the Old Republic and so on and so on. So
very cool. Nice. I do have a question based on what you said. You said you asked how what it was like scoring for video games. How is scoring for video games different from like something like television, a commercial, or just even TV in general?
I mean, it's the same in a lot of ways, but different in some. Mostly from the technical side, it's different. The schedules are different. Typically, a game has a longer schedule for music. It also typically has more music than a film would have, just because you have to sort of account for every possible scenario that a game player could encounter. Where, you know, and also where film and TV sort of have a finite timeline you're writing music to. With games, it could, you know, that timeline changes constantly. So you have to account for that. It's a bit like, from a technical side, like building puzzle pieces to create a piece of music rather than creating one fixed piece of music like you would in a film. So building pieces of music that can seamlessly loop on themselves, writing multiple variations in the same piece of music so that you can have them both playing at the same time, and then the audio system, music system, can do a natural crossfade from one version to the other to ramp up the intensity or make it darker, make it lighter, however, you know, and then also build in transitions to go to, you know, sort of ending stingers, finales, that kind of thing. So it's kind of like building a puzzle is the way I describe it. And because you're working more with still images and concept art at the beginning stages on games, because the music comes in the middle of the production process rather than film, where it comes in at the very end. So you're working with not as, you know, complete content as you would be on a film. So it's a lot of sort of imagining what it would be like and really just, you know, making sure you're covering all possible scenarios. So.
Yeah, actually going off of that, I actually had this question kind of written down. And because like you had said, in the film scoring process, it's like a very post-production heavy kind of process where like you have a cut of the film, you have to, you know, hit XYZ kind of cuts if you're looking for, you know, a technique. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, the Star Wars films, for example, you know, John Williams will hit cuts with everything, you know, that he writes right. in, and this is based off of the, what they have in the film. If you're working kind of halfway through the process of the video game, do you get kind of a free range of like what you want to do, or are there maybe, you know, they say like, oh, there's going to be this cutscene and we really want this to happen in it,
you know? Yeah, I mean, because everyone's sort of, you know, because of the early stage that music starts, everyone's a bit unsure of exactly what the timeline will be like for cutscenes. So we're really sort of writing to all the possibilities. So it still needs to function a lot like a film score. So, you know, say in a film, I get a cut and I know I have exactly 30 seconds before I need to make this, you know, transition to a new scene or something like that. So for a game, we know that that scene is going to happen. We don't know how long it will take to get there. So I have to write enough music to cover the space leading up to it, and then also write a transitional piece of music. So if that happens to be 30 seconds or a minute, I can bring that transitional piece in at any point and lead to that next cut. So it's, you know, a bit like I was saying before, where it's, you're sort of planning all possibilities and building puzzle pieces to create a score once the content's complete.
That's so cool.
So I'm gonna fanboy a little bit for you, Gordy. So yep. Star Wars: The Old Republic, obviously, in all the expansions, you did all the music for. I love the soundtrack that BioWare released back in, I think, 2011. In fact, yeah. we used the what was it? Mandalorian blockade piece that you did specifically awesome. As the intro for our show early on, like, you know, 100 episodes ago. It was one awesome. Of the it was one That's of the, cool. and it was really cool because a lot of people who heard it, some knew where it was from, but it was obviously, it still sounded Star Wars, but it wasn't right. like the traditional fanfare. I wanted something different to set us apart, and I used your music for it. just a small piece. And a couple people were actually able to spot out from us. I do have a question specifically about that game. Did you sure. do the Cantina music that was in that game that loops over and over again?
I did not, actually. Okay. The Cantina music was a different composer. There were actually, I mean, because there was a lot of music in the Old Republic, so we actually had quite a few composers working on it. A guy named Peter McConnell composed all of the Cantina music.
Okay. So. I was going to get really excited because that Cantina music, I think, played for hours while, you know, waiting for certain things to happen in the game, totally. Waiting for friends to get online. My wife and I were sitting there listening to that Cantina music over and over again.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's a lot of fun. All that stuff is really cool. You did a good job on that.
Yeah, no, that game and all your music, like I said, the score for it was just absolutely phenomenal. Now, that leads me cool. to Battlefront and Battlefront 2, which is the latest sure. games, I guess, that have come out from not Lucasfilm, but EA, that is starts with the Star Wars property. Obviously, those games, especially the first one, was so much getting you to play in the original trilogy. And the right. second one gets you to play in the original trilogy and the prequels. With the score that you did for these, how much did you pull from like John Williams as inspiration, because he did these original scores for the films?
Sure. So for Battlefront 1, like you said, I mean, it was very much based on the original trilogy. And because of that, I mean, the assignment when I was asked to work on it, I mean, the request that I was given was, we need somebody that can write the B-side to the original 1977 Star Wars soundtrack. And so it needed to fit in with that music completely seamlessly. And so that was really actually a unique challenge, and very unlike the Old Republic, where we had, you know, I had a little more creative freedom to sort of stretch out, you know, from the John Williams sound. I mean, it certainly still fit the Star Wars universe, and I try not to, you know, go too far away. So, you know, it still lives in that world, but, you know, I could branch out a little bit musically. With Battlefront 1, the idea was, quite literally, it would be a piece of John Williams music from the original films, and then it would transition into a piece of music that I would write, and then I'd have to write a transition at the end of my music back into his music, and so on and so on, so that it was about a 50-50 split on John Williams and me in that game. And the reason for doing that is because in those original scores that John Williams wrote, obviously they're to picture, and so they're on a fixed timeline, and he's using all of these character leitmotifs throughout the score. And so there's never a moment where it lasts for more than, I don't know, maybe 15 seconds before he plays somebody else's theme, and then, you know, then it'll be a love theme, and then 10 seconds later it cuts to action, and then it cuts to, you know, the Imperial March theme, and so it's constantly moving around, and we really needed music that could sustain one particular mood for longer periods of time without introducing these character themes that may or may not be in the game at that time. So that was sort of the goal, is to fill gaps in the original score. Now, Battlefront 2, for example, was completely different because it wasn't just based on the original trilogy. It was original trilogy, prequels, Clone War era, Force Awakens era, Rogue One. I mean, everything's in there. So then it really was sort of gloves off, go for it, do whatever you want. And I really just took it my own way on Battlefront 2.
Yeah, so I know Ben has a question. He's like typing at me, but I do have a question specifically about Battlefront 2, because yeah. It had a story mode, and we haven't ever seen Iden Versio on screen or anything like that.
Right.
How was that compared to, like, you mentioned how Battlefront 1 and Battlefront 2, you kind of were gloves off. How did that, writing the music for her story, since that's you putting your stamp on it, music-wise, and it. I would say the story is fairly linear to the point, is that closer to something like a film? Because, you know, it's only going to take so long for certain things to happen versus like kind of something of a loop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, writing the music for the campaign, and particularly for Iden, and I'm glad you brought that up, it was probably the most fun I've had working on a game score ever, because it was literally like scoring a Star Wars film, because like you said, it was very linear and narrative, and you know, it was a bit more like actually scoring emotion and drama versus, you know, doing background music that heightens action or something like that, like, you know, a lot of the other music in the multiplayer does. So it gave me an opportunity to write brand new character themes. So there is a theme for Iden, there's a theme for her father Garrick, and you know, and these themes intertwine, and they, you know, bounce off of each other. And, you know, there's, you know, sort of big triumphant versions of these themes. And then there's really, you know, sad and dark and emotional versions of the theme. So it's a lot more like writing, you know, a very old fashioned film score in a lot of ways. And I had a lot of fun with that because, you know, I got to sort of put, like you said, put my stamp on the Star Wars canon with coming up with themes for these characters specifically. And, you know, getting to, you know, sort of weave them into the Star Wars music tapestry was, you know, it was a cool challenge, but a lot of fun.
Well, I've never actually met a composer who has stepped into the John Williams verse before. So I actually have a very strange, specific question, but I've never actually spoken to, you know, Michael Giacchino, Alexander Desplat, Patrick Doyle, right, or James Newton Howard. When you're faced with writing something based off of something you love and know and have known forever, what's the easiest and what's the hardest thing about doing that?
You know, what's funny is because I love that music so much, and I grew up with it, and it's just a part of sort of my fabric. It made it easy to conceive the music itself, because I almost just write what comes most naturally and ends up sounding like Star Wars. In most cases, in the rest of my career for films or other games, what I end up having to do is sort of tone back my John Williamsisms, because, right, you know, it's like, that's not what people are after, but that's kind of very natural to me because that's what I grew up with. So it makes it easy in that sense. But then what makes it difficult is sort of the pressure of knowing how, you know, sort of grand a task like that is. To step into a universe like that and know that it's a universe that already has a built-in, you know, billion person fan base, and, you know, that looms heavy overhead pretty much the entire time I'm writing.
So, right. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Do you ever find that, like, I don't know, when you say like letting out the inner John Williams or you know, that kind of style that you find yourself writing in, I know in the Star Wars score specifically, there's very, very, very few moments of actual use of electronic music. Do you ever find yourself thinking in that way? Or do you ever want to, when you say you're putting your own kind of stamp on it, do you want to kind of put the two together? Because I know that's becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, it's something I do a lot in you know, on other projects, and to a lesser degree on the Star Wars projects. But yeah, I mean, I've conceived ideas that have synths and electronics and that kind of thing in the Star Wars universe, and I always have to do it somewhat tastefully, you know, like, you know, sort of tread lightly and not, you know, push it too far because, you know, of course I have, you know, infinite amounts of oversight going on well, but, you know, so I have to make sure it still fits in the Star Wars universe and, you know, I can't really squeeze too much in there, but yeah, I mean, I really love the idea of doing that. And, but to be honest, I mean, I guess my most natural sound is symphonic. I mean, the music I hear most naturally is usually orchestral in nature, and that's sort of my background. So it lends itself well to working on a project like this. I mean, you know, the ideas I come up with most easily tend to be, you know, these orchestral symphonic sounds that John Williams would use.
Yeah. Cool.
So you've done a lot of different Star Wars music. Is there a favorite character you've had while you were working on it? Like, is it something from the Old Republic that you got to play the game and you got attached to it? Or is it Iden? Because I know you said you were really happy that I brought up Iden from Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
Or was it something you did in some other project? Like, is there something that you just, like, a character, the story, or something that you bonded with while you were working on the music?
Yeah, I mean, a couple, to be honest. I mean, Iden is, you know, like I mentioned, it's my favorite character that I've had the chance to work on music to accompany. I like her character a lot. I like how dynamic she is. I like the journey she has. So I think the story is really cool. And it really lent itself well to doing multiple variations of the same theme, you know, like John Williams would do for a character theme where, you know, there's, you know, basically the same piece of music can pass through, you know, 10 different emotional states. And that's really kind of fun to conceive. So that, for me, was probably my favorite character to work on. I mean, with the Star Wars games, a lot of times I'm also dealing with writing music to not accompany characters as much as accompany environments or factions, I guess. And for the Old Republic, I really latched on to writing the theme for the Republic. So there was an Imperial theme, there was a Republic theme, and then there were variations of those two themes that would branch off and, you know, find themselves in different iterations based on what planet you were on, that kind of thing. So composing the music that was actually the Republic theme that we based a lot of material on, that was a lot of fun for me too.
Did you find it awkward when Last Jedi came out and John Williams had written a new Republic theme?
yeah, that is a little awkward.
Was that? It's always a little awkward, like, oh.
Yeah exactly.
But you're like, it's okay, because you're John Williams.
Yeah, exactly. So. He can do what he wants.
Nice.
All right. So I do have to ask, just because we've been talking about it on the show recently, what is your thoughts on The Last Jedi? I know this is not to you directly, but we want to know your thoughts.
Yeah. I absolutely love The Last Jedi. I've seen it four times in the theaters.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I've watched a lot of criticism unfold, and, you know, good and bad, and the bad, I mean, I understand some of it, you know, I can understand where people might be coming from, but I mean, I think maybe it's because of the age I was when the Star Wars franchise first, like, sort of became popular. I mean, I was just a kid, you know, I mean, so I grew up with it, and because of that, because of nostalgia, I can forgive a lot of things. But I think also one thing is, it's very easy to forget the point of a film like this is to have fun and enjoy yourself. And for me, that film was just a ride. I actually didn't even realize it was, what is it, like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something
like
that?
It's long, but when I was done, I was like, oh, is that it? Like, I didn't realize how long it was. It was
exactly.
Great.
Same here. I actually thought, oh, wow. I thought it was like an hour 40 or something like that. And my wife is like, that was actually 2 hours and 40 minutes. I was like, man, that flew by. Let's go see it again tomorrow. So we saw it the next day, and then a week later we went again. I ended up seeing it four times in theaters. I think I love the way he treated the story, Ryan. And I think I understand some of the grievances, but I think it's really sort of bringing the Star Wars storyline into a more modern era, and I think it works.
I agree. That's actually kind of the consensus we've come up with. This is it definitely cool. had a very unique job to kind of move the story forward, and it's the first film that happens directly after the last one, so there couldn't be a lot that happens because it's literally a continuation. It's part one and part two, if you will. So I'm glad that you're on the same page with us. Ben, I'm gonna
really quick question though.
All right,
okay,
sure.
Because he's a musician, I can actually ask this question and not feel weird. When the title crawl in Last Jedi finished and it ended with the piccolo solo from A New Hope, did you get weird feeling? Because like I did. It was so cool.
I loved it.
It was incredible. I was with I saw the premiere with a friend of mine who's also a musician, and when that happened, we both turned to each other and we're like, oh my gosh.
I think it's super cool, and I think what's actually, you know, take it to a different even further level, hearing that, this is what I was thinking when I heard it, was you know, obviously the original scores, they were all recorded in London, the London Symphony. The Force Awakens was the first one in the Star Wars franchise ever to be recorded in LA, with musicians here where I live. And so hearing that and hearing that piccolo solo, I know exactly who's playing it because they're a really good friend of mine. And so I'm just thinking, oh my God, I can't believe that this friend of mine got to do that, thing, you know, that I've been hearing, you know, for 40 years, I've been hearing that piccolo solo, you know, and then hearing her, you know, the way she put her little inflections on it. It's like, oh, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah, crazy. You know? So cool. Okay. I had to have that moment. Sorry, Mikey.
It's all right. Now, so I don't want to take up too much of your time, Gordy. So I appreciate everything you've done. Ben, do you have any other questions before I get into our Star Wars lightning round questions for Gordy?
Oh, gosh. Wait, we have late. Oh, we do. Look at that. No, let's do this. I like the lightning round question.
All right, yeah, so these are some very simple questions, all your opinion, so there's no right or wrong answer, Gordy. Okay. So
swap off with the questions.
You can't. All right, you can do. You go after me. We'll just swap back and forth. Okay. He's excited to ask these questions, Gordy. So first question, Gordy: who shot first, Greedo or Han?
Han.
Okay, Han.
Go. Who's a better pilot, Poe or Han or Anakin?
Oh my God, Poe.
Okay, good. Okay. No, he's right.
It's okay. I'll take. All right, which is cuter, the Porgs or BB-8?
Oh, I would say BB-8 because he has more character.
Okay, he can't be eaten either, so that's a good thing too.
That's true. Yeah.
I have the next question. Better teacher, Yoda or Luke?
Yoda.
Yeah. You're sure? I thought Luke was pretty good in Last Jedi. He threw the lightsaber over his shoulder. All right, last question, the one that really makes or breaks this, Gordy: prequels or sequels?
Prequels or sequels?
So the prequel trilogy or the new sequel trilogy? Which one are you leaning towards? Sequel trilogy,
for sure.
All right.
Yeah. I have one more question: prequel scores or sequel scores? So far,
prequel scores.
Yo, thank you. Okay, very good. This is not.
I think there is best work
that has come out in the last several years, but yeah, those prequels—they just came off his pen like it was no big deal.
It's brilliant, and actually, I have a lot of opinions on that, but I'll keep them short. I think it's his best writing, maybe in any film that he's worked on, was the prequel era, and a lot of that translates over to Harry Potter, which he was doing at the same time, which I also think is his best writing.
Yeah, for sure.
And have you both noticed? Sorry,
go ahead. Oh, okay. I was just going to say, when he was doing Clones and Chamber of Secrets at the same time, the Quidditch match has the Zan the Assassin chase music. Okay, totally. We both have this. Okay, good. Awesome.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, too, but, you know.
I know, but I'm just like, you know, you're not... I can't have these kind of conversations with you, Mikey.
No, I know. But you got to... Yeah, okay. Anyway.
But anyway, okay, cool. So, but yeah, I'm in total agreement with you. I think the prequels are untouchable.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's his writing, but I also have to say there was something that was in common with the Harry Potter score, the first three, and the prequel scores, and that was who he had orchestrating the music, and that was Conrad Pope. And I think Conrad Pope brought something to those scores that was magical and whimsical, and his sort of craftsmanship of understanding the players and the orchestra is like probably the best in the orchestration world, in my opinion. Right. And he did not orchestrate the sequels. So That sound is not there as much.
Yeah,
it's a different sound, which I also love, but yeah. I love the, you know, the delicate nature.
I miss the Abbey Road sound a lot.
Yeah. I love the Abbey Road sound.
Oh man, the Abbey Road sound with the LSO.
Yep.
The long way, not the short way.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
That's how we recorded everything for Battlefront too, by the way.
That's amazing. Oh, good. Okay, so that's awesome. That's amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Mike, you can go back. I'm done.
Okay, it's all right. It's all right. Hey, this is why I wanted to make sure you were on this interview here. All right, Cody. So I want to make sure, like I said, I want to respect your time. We are wrapping up. Is there anything you want to share with our listeners regarding to Star Wars, composing, inspiration, how they can kind of follow through or get a hold of you or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, you can reach out to me on Twitter or Facebook. And Twitter handle is just at Gordy Habs, GORDYHAAB. You find me on Facebook as well. And you can find my website, which is GordyHab.com. And there's some music there. And, you know, you can read a little bit about what I've done in the past and that kind of thing. So,
awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at our radio podcast or on Facebook.com. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Ben.
May the Force be with you.
And also with you.